Bible, open up to 1 Peter. 1 Peter, we'll be in chapter 3 still. First Peter chapter 3. We'll just start reading in verse 1 again. Likewise, wives, be subject to your own husbands, so that even if some do not obey the word, they may be won without a word by the conduct of their wives. When they see your respectful and pure conduct, do not let your adorning be external, the braiding of hair and the putting on of gold jewelry or the clothing you wear, but let your adorning be the hidden person of the heart with the imperishable beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit, which in God's sight is very precious. For this is how the holy women who hoped in God used to adorn themselves, by submitting to their own husbands, as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord. And you are her children if you do good, and do not fear anything that is frightening. Verse 7. Likewise, husbands, live with your wives in an understanding way, showing honor to the woman as the weaker vessel, since they are heirs with you of the grace of life, so that your prayers may not be hindered. Let's pray. Father, thank you for this day. Thank you for your word. Father, I just pray that you be with us now, especially as men, as we study this verse, this one verse that Peter has written to us as husbands, and help us to see that although it is only one verse, there's a lot in that one verse, and that Peter's speaking very forcefully to us. And so I just pray that you work on our hearts today, Father. Work on me, because I am a husband and a father, and I'm preaching to myself today. Father, above all, I pray that we make a big deal about you, Jesus, and what you've done because of the gospel, because of how you have lived for us and died for us and how you've risen again. As Mike said, that if we believe that, then there should be a change when we encounter God. And Father, as husbands, we're to love our wives just like you loved us. And so, Father, I pray that today that you work on us a little bit. And it's in your name we pray. Amen. You know, last week we talked about how wives are to be subject to or submissive to their husbands. And what Peter was showing us there is that God has put in place a structure inside of marriage, is that the man is supposed to humbly, lovingly, sacrificially lead his wife. So as the man submits to God the Father, obeys God the Father, that then flows into the way that he humbly, lovingly, sacrificially leads his wife and his family and everything that he does. And wives are then to submit to their husbands as those husbands submit to God. And simply put, what we said last week is that it's submission for women. What it means is this, is that we understand that at the end of the day, God is going to hold your husband, he is going to hold men responsible for their homes and for their marriages. We put it this way, that if Jesus came over to your house today, and ladies, you answered the door, he's going to say, hey, how you doing? Where's he at? I'll deal with you later. He's going to come after us first. And so we understand that there's a weight and there's a responsibility and there's a burden placed on our husbands. And so as a result, we submit. We treat them with respect and gentleness, as Peter says. He goes on to say that some of you live with men that don't know Jesus. And he says, if that's you, then the way that you live out the gospel in your home in front of your husband will point them to Jesus, and that they could be won without a word. Now, it doesn't mean that we don't speak to our husbands about Jesus. It means that we don't ever open our mouth. It just means that we don't be a nag, that we don't just constantly run around and tear him down and constantly say, well, you never go to church or you never want to pray. But instead, you step back and you live the gospel out in front of him. And that there are times that you pick your spots and you say, hey, this is what God's teaching me. This is what God's showing me. And that's very, very difficult, as we said last week, because I know so many times that we want it to happen immediately, and sometimes it doesn't. It takes years and years of you living that out, of demonstrating the gospel to him before sometimes he responds. But that's what Peter tells us to do. And he goes on and he finishes by saying to cultivate an inner beauty of gentleness and quietness. Basically, that just means that we gently support, love, and encourage our husbands. And he points to the great women of the Bible, and I love that. And he basically is reminding women that, listen, if you know Jesus, if you've trusted in him, you're caught up in this grand story of redemption that God has been telling since the beginning of time. That you're part of a proud line of women that lived out the gospel in word and in deed. And that if you've believed in Jesus, the privilege of that belief leads to a behavior change where we live out the gospel in front of our husbands in what we say and do. Now in verse 7, he turns his attention to the men. And now, ladies, I know you're going, well, we got six verses. The guys get one. Okay. But his tone in this one verse is very forceful. He's not, I don't want to say he's yelling, but at the same time, he's very forceful with what he says to the men. He speaks in six verses very kindly, very gently to women, but in one verse, he gets his point across to the guys in a very, very good way, all right? Look at verse 7 with me again. Likewise, husbands, live with your wives in an understanding way, showing honor to the woman as the weaker vessel, since they are heirs with you of the grace of life, so that your prayers may not be hindered. That likewise right there is pointing us back to chapter 2, verses 21 through 25, where Peter turns our attention to Jesus, where he lays out the gospel of how Jesus lived, how Jesus went to the cross for us. By his wounds, we have been healed. And what he's trying to say is, listen, men, look to the example of Jesus. It has to start right there. That if we're going to sacrificially, humbly, lovingly lead our wives, it starts by looking to Jesus. It starts by leading them like Jesus led us. It starts by loving them like Jesus loved us. Ephesians 5:25. Husbands, love your wife as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for the church. It's a very straightforward command, as Paul says. It's an active command, which means that you and I as men, we don't love our wives by doing nothing. We don't. So if you're going to love your wives as Christ loved the church, how do you do that? 1 John 4:19 says, we love, why? Because he first loved us. See, Jesus didn't just sit back and say, all right, tell you what, I'll love you if you'll do this, 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 and this. Clean yourself up a little bit, behave a little bit, and then after you do all that, I tell you what, then I'll love you. Then I'll die for you. Not how it worked, was it? That's not how Jesus loved us. See, despite our failures, despite our dysfunctions, despite of our sins, he loved us anyways. When absolutely nothing in our life warranted his favor and his love, Jesus loved us enough to carry our sin to the cross, to take our place, to absorb God's wrath towards our sin, to take the punishment that was rightfully ours. He exchanged his perfect life for our imperfect one. Jesus loved us that much. And as men, what he's saying, what Peter's saying, what Paul's saying is that's leadership and that's how we're called to love our wives. And see, I firmly believe that this command to love our wives is far more difficult than that command to submit. And I'll tell you why I think it's difficult. It's because we are called to unselfishly love. We're called to love without expecting anything in return. It doesn't say love her if she responds. It says you love your wife. Regardless of her response, you love your wife. And that's hard because honestly, if we're real honest as men, most of the time what we do is we don't love our wives that way. Every one of us is guilty of that. I can prove it. And your wife's probably going to laugh because it probably happened to some of you just this week. Right? You've had a bad week, bad couple of weeks. You haven't been treating your wife very good. Hadn't been very good to the kids, hadn't been very good to the dog, maybe you've had a rough week at work, whatever it is, and you get to thinking in your head, you know, I miss my wife, if you catch my drift. And so wives, you come home one day and your husband's sitting there vacuuming, right? Maybe in his drawers, I don't know, and he's just smiling. See where I'm going with that? We're not doing that because we unselfishly love our wives. We're getting to thinking that maybe if I vacuum the floors, there's going to be something in this for me. And that's not how we're called to love our wives. We are called to love our wives regardless of their response to us. That's what he's saying, is that he loved us even when we don't return that love. And so as husbands, we love our wives. That's what that likewise means, is that Peter says, look to the example of Jesus. The gospel should shape how you live in front of your wife. It should shape how you love your wives, all right? Look what he says again, 1 Peter 3:7. Likewise, husbands, live with your wife in an understanding way. Now, living with them in an understanding way, it means a lot of things, but there is an area in there, in the Greek, where he's talking about sexual intimacy. Is that is a part of a marriage, is that you get the privilege of marriage is sex. That God made it that way. He created it. It's a gift. He gave it to us inside the confines of marriage. So he's saying, live with your wives. So ladies, what that means is stop being refrigerators. Every now and then, you don't have to be so cold towards your husband. Men, what that means for you is be present with them. Live with them. When you come home, stop checking out. Stop coming home, sitting down, say, I've had a hard day, and turn on the TV, and then you not be there the rest of the evening. When you come home, as I heard one pastor say one time, that's second shift. Your day's not over until those kids are in bed. Mama's been home with them. Trust me, Mariah was sick this week. I had the kids all day. I've seen the job of a mom. I don't want it. That is hard work. You come home. What can I do, honey? How can I help? You play with the kids. You engage the kids. You engage your wife. You be present with her. And hear me, that living with your wife, see if she doesn't change in her attitude towards you just a little bit when you begin to love her, when you begin to give yourself up for her. But beyond that, he says, live with your wives in an understanding way. What that means is that you get to know your wife, understand your wife, figure out what makes her tick. I love the story. A bunch of reporters caught Mrs. Albert Einstein one time. And they were asking her, hey, do you understand your husband's theory of relativity? Do you get all that? And she just smiled at him and said, nope, but I understand the doctor. And I think that's a great application for us as men, is that understand your wife. Get to know her. Figure her out. Be a student of her. Listen, my wife loves jewelry. She loves those things. She does. I can buy those things for her, and she'll be grateful for them. But if you really want to win Mariah's heart, it's got to be something practical. I bought her a griddle one Christmas. Jackpot, all right? And I know a lot of you women are like, I don't want nothing that plugs in. That's awesome. That's not how Mariah rolls, okay? You get to know them. See, I know one thing about us men is that so many of us men will spend hours and hours memorizing stats about our football team, memorizing all these numbers and figures. We'll spend months researching our next pickup truck or the best hunting gear. And we spend very little time researching and understanding and getting to know what makes our wives tick. That's what Peter's talking about right there, is that we understand them, get to know them, love them. That's what that means, all right? Verse 7, look at it again. Likewise, husbands, live with your wives in an understanding way, showing honor to the woman as the weaker vessel. So showing honor to your wives. Ladies, regardless of what popular culture tells you, the Bible is not anti-woman. The Bible holds women in a very, very high regard. In fact, right here it says honor, show her honor. It's just one instance where the Bible talks about it, but it shows honor, that ladies, you're to be honored, you're to be treasured, you're to be valued, you're to be held in high esteem. That idea of honor is this old-fashioned idea that a lot of people in our culture have lost of chivalry. That's what it means. It means to treat women with respect. You know, this idea of opening doors for them, standing when they come in the room, you know, tipping the hat. Honor them, show them respect, honor them. We talked last week about non-Christian feminism. See, feminism has killed this idea right here. I got a buddy who has a family member who is from the left coast and a big time feminist. And she was in town visiting recently. And as they get on a trolley to go across town to the football game, all the men stand up when she comes on the bus to give their seat up. And I mean, just defiantly refuse to sit down. That's what feminism's done. And that's what Peter's saying, is that, man, there's this idea of chivalry, of honoring them, of treating them with respect. And ladies, when they do it, let them do it. They're just holding you in high regard, all right? But this idea of honor is so much more than that, all right? And I'm gonna tick off six things for you real quick, just real practical. The Bible's practical sometimes. Six things that we can do as men, as husbands, that we can do to honor our wives, all right? So the first one is this: honor her physically. Peter says that she is the weaker vessel. Now, ladies, it doesn't mean mentally, it doesn't mean emotionally, it doesn't mean spiritually. This is talking about physically. All right, so unless you're Holly Holm, okay, who many of y'all know who that is, most women are weaker than their wives, or their husbands. Whoa, easy. Are weaker than their husbands. They are. It's just a fact. It's how God made us. So husbands, we honor our wives physically. So when you fight, men, do you give your wife that one more look, that one more word, and I'm going to knock you out look? Do you walk around and intimidate her and the kids and walk around and just because you're a man and you're big and bad in your home, scare them into submission? Do you get in her face? Do you threaten her? Do you hit her? See, if you do any of those things, you're not a man, you're a coward. You honor her physically. Women should feel protected and safe by their husbands. They should not feel scared. She is fine china. You're a thermos, all right? Treat her like that. You know how you treat mama's china at the house? I don't want to touch it. I'm scared of that stuff, so I'm very careful. That's how we handle our wives. We honor them physically. But you also honor her emotionally. See, a lot of men, and man, this drives me nuts, okay? A lot of men say, I ain't emotional. I'm a man. You're emotional. I can prove it to you. You're going to go home today, and Jameis Crablegs Winston is going to be beating our tails on the TV for the Cowboys, and you're not going to just sit back and go, oh, well, I guess we're losing. You're going to be screaming at the TV just like I am going, what are we doing? Where's Tony? You're out on the golf course and you hit one bad, you're not going to go, well, hit that one pretty poorly. You're going to scream. You're going to throw your clubs. Come to work tomorrow and all your stuff's sitting on the sidewalk. You're not going to be like, well, it was good working here. Another guy gets in your face and questions your honesty or your integrity. You're not going to be like, yeah, you're right. You're going to get mad and you're going to be like, what? You are an emotional person. Men, we are emotionally, and listen, your wife needs you to connect with her emotionally. She needs that from you. See, so many men turn their marriage into a job description. Well, I'll go to work and then I'll come home and she'll take care of everything else at the house. That's not how it works. And see, when the wife then files for divorce, the common thing that a lot of men say is, well, I never hit you. I never yelled at you. I treated you good. I provided for you. You got a roof over your head, lady. Yeah, you may have done all those things, but in the end, you weren't there. You were just a lump sitting on the couch. You honor her emotionally. You know, Gary Chapman wrote a book years ago, and it's such a good book. I use it in premarital counseling. A lot of you know it. It's called The Five Love Language. It's brilliant. It's simple. It makes sense. He basically says that there are five ways that people experience love. Through acts of service, gifts, physical touch, words, or quality time. See, in my marriage, Mariah and I are both quality timers. We'll leech the life out of people. Trust me. A lot of you have been around me. You're like, just go away. I want to hang out. I want to be where the people dance. That's who I am. So me and Mariah can get in the car, no kids, go to Borger and go grocery shopping and come back and feel loved because we've spent time together. My pastor in Plains always used to tell a story about how he's a words of affirmation guy. Like, he'll drive you nuts because he constantly needs you to go, you are so awesome. You are amazing. You're awesome. You're great. But that's how he feels loved, is when people brag on him. But his wife was a service person. And so he would walk around the house in the early days of their marriage going, I love you, honey. You're so awesome. You're so beautiful. You're so amazing. And although she loved those things, what she really wanted him to do was go do some laundry. And when he figured that out, though, everything changed for his marriage. Is that she feels loved when he's serving her and helping her. And all of us experience love in different ways, all right? Sometimes your love language, whatever it is, it changes with time. I know now service is more important to Mariah that we've got kids than it was before. She's had a hard day. I can go load the dishwasher and clean the kitchen while she's bathing the girls, and that means a lot to her, all right? So if you're a man and your wife is a quality timer, here's what it means. Sit your rear on the couch and have a conversation with her. Quit saying, well, I don't want to talk. No, have a conversation with your wife. That's what that means. And I get it. Sometimes it's unnatural for you. It goes against everything you feel. But it goes back to what we've said. Husbands, love your wife like Christ loved the church. You really think Jesus wanted to go to the cross and hang there and die? Do you think that was comfortable for him? No. So our response to what Jesus has done is we do what's unnatural. We love our wives. Guys, too many men are conquerors. And we've all had this experience of guys where, man, we want to date the girl so bad that we'll act a fool to date her, but then as soon as we get her, we're like, oh, well. And we dump her and we go on to the next one. A lot of you have done that in your marriage. I got her. And then you've just left it at that.
Stop being a conqueror. You need to be an explorer. Trust me, they're complicated creatures. It's going to take you a lifetime to figure it out. Get started. Honor your wife emotionally, right? Honor your wife verbally. So how do you talk to your wife? Are you rude? Are you crude? Are you sarcastic to her? Do you make fun of her when you're with your buddies? Do you be like, yeah, my old lady, ball and chain. Do you run her down? Listen, guys, one thing I know is if you speak ill or sarcastically to your wife, your kids are eventually going to pick up on that. You want to know why your kids speak to your mom and mama that way sometimes, Dad? It's because they see it in you. Man, my brother-in-law has the greatest story I've ever heard. I love it. It just fills my heart with joy every time I hear the story. Is he talked about he came home when he was like 16 or 17, and he was late, and mama was waiting up for him. And he came home, and he yelled at his mom. I mean, screamed at her. And he said the next thing he knows, he was going through the air into the bookcase at the house. Daddy came out of nowhere, and he said, that's my wife, and you will never speak to my wife that way again. You understand me, boy. And he's telling you, I hadn't spoke to mom that way ever since then. See, Mark understood honoring your husband or your wife verbally, all right? So speak kindly to your wife. Honor her in what you say, all right? Number four, honor her financially. In Genesis chapter 3, verses 17 through 19, right after the fall, God comes to Adam and Eve, and he speaks to Adam first. Here's what he says to Adam. Because you've listened to the voice of your wife and have eaten of the tree of which I commanded you, you shall not eat of it. Cursed is the ground because of you. In pain you shall eat of it all the days of your life. Thorns and thistles it shall bring forth for you, and you shall eat the plants of the field. By the sweat of your face you shall eat the bread, till you return to the ground, for out of it you were taken, for you are dust, and to dust you shall return. Listen, God gave men the curse of work. That is our curse. That is our burden. So ladies, let me say something. If you want to work, then work. Nothing wrong with it. Don't walk out here and be like, well, Byron said I can't work. No, I didn't. If you want to work, then work, and you work with all your heart for God, okay? You can work. But men, if they come to you and say, I don't want to work, I want to be home with the kids, then guess what this means? It means that we do everything in our power to make sure that that happens. That's what that means. Men, we don't get an option of not working. God gave us that curse. That's our burden. It's not if we want to work or not. It is you work. So what it means is that we steward our money well as well. Guys, can I tell you something too? I think sometimes some of us got this old-fashioned manly idea that, well, I'm the man. I got to handle the money. You may not be very good at handling the money. That just may not be your area. There is nothing wrong with letting mama take care of that. You bring it home, let her manage it, let her steward it. I've already told you in my marriage, I have no business, right? Mariah takes care of those things. Now, we talk about major decisions, and I ultimately will be the one to say, okay, let's spend this money here or there, but I'm smart enough to know that my wife's better at that than I am, all right? But you steward your money where? Well, but again, we don't get the choice of not working. We have to work. That's what God told us to do. One author put it this way, and I just think he puts it so well. He says, the man's curse was providing for his family. This means that a man will always find it very difficult not to idolize or demonize his work and to do it unto the Lord as an act of worship, which God has chosen to mature and grow him as a man. And what the weakest, most worthless men among us do is say, oh, my load is too heavy. I know yours is heavy, but I need you to carry half of mine too. Men, you have to work harder and smarter than the other men if you want to feed your family. That is your responsibility. So we honor our wives financially. Number five, honor her technologically. Turn off the phone and pay attention to her. Shut off the TV, pay attention to her. Close the laptop down, take work away sometimes when you're at home, and talk to your wife. Men, this also means stop looking at porn. Quit it. 64% of Christian men admit that they looked at pornography once a month. Men my age, 18 to 30, 77% of them say that they look at it at least monthly. That stuff's fake. That stuff's not real. That stuff will destroy your marriage. Stop. That's what it means to honor your wife technologically. Stop. Stop filling your mind with things that are harmful to your marriage. Women, you don't get off the hook here though either. 33% of Christian women view porn a few times a year, 15% once a month. Ladies, stop reading porn. The Kindle has made it so easy for you to go pick up stuff that would have embarrassed you 20 years ago to be seen reading in public, but you'll hide behind it and read it all day long. Stop it. It's harming your marriage. It's hurting your marriage. The Christian romance stuff you read, it's hurting your marriage too. I'll tell you why, because you're sitting there reading a book about this godly, romantic, spiritual guy, all the while Bob's next to you in bed going, and you're going, I wish I had a guy like whatever the Amish guy is in the book you're reading that week. Stop it. It's hurting your marriage. You know, I've been amazed at the number of women, too, who will go to movies about male strippers and 50 Shades of Grey and celebrate it and act like it's okay. But then if you came home this afternoon and your husband and a few of his buddies were watching pornography, you would throw a fit. It is no different. Stop looking at that stuff. And men, it starts with us. Pay more attention to the live woman you have at your house than the stuff on the screen. Honor your wife technologically. And then finally, honor her spiritually. Peter says at the end of that verse, in verse 7, he says, since they are heirs with you of the grace of life, so that your prayers may not be hindered. What that means is that you set the tone for your family. You're the one that should be getting the kids out of bed in the morning. You're the one that should be saying, it's Sunday, we're going to church. You're the one that should be making Sunday morning a priority. You're the one that should say, hey, listen, Jesus first, everything else is secondary. You're the one that should be praying with your kids. You're the one that should be reading the Bible to your kids. You're the one that should be leading the family in devotions. Men, it is on us. We are the thermostat in our home when it comes to spiritual matters. Quit putting all that off on mama. That's your job. That's what that means. Because remember, at the end of the day, Jesus is going to look you in the face and say, what did you do? How did you lead them? How did you love them? Honor your family spiritually. That's what it means. He says that they are heirs with us of the grace of God. It means that, listen, they have equal value and worth in the sight of God. That God finds your wife precious. And because God finds her precious, he expects you and I to take care of her. That's what that means. See, men, as men, we're supposed to be tough and tender. We're supposed to be both of those things. See, we're tough in defending the weak and the oppressed and abused and the poor. We're tough and we're honorable when it comes to how we handle our business. We're to be tough with stiff-necked, hard-hearted bullies that hurt other people. We're tough in carving out safety and protection for our families. But we're tender in comforting the hurting and encouraging the downcast. We're tender with our wives, loving them as Christ loved the church. We're tender with our kids, where we put our arms around them and say, I love you, I'm proud of you, you have value to me. We kiss them, we tell them those things. Men, we're supposed to be like Jesus. See, Jesus was tough enough to go to the cross without shedding a tear, but yet he was tender enough to weep at the grave of his friend Lazarus. That's who we're supposed to be. But see, too often, we're either one or the other. See, men who are tough without being tender, we call those chauvinists, right? I got a list I want to just read you very quickly. I found in a book called Real Marriage. See if you recognize any of these guys, or maybe you are one of these guys. I'm going to tell you about No Sissy Stuff Sam. He believes being a man is simply the opposite of a woman. He lacks emotion other than anger used for bullying and intimidation, because other emotions are a sign of weakness. He's not verbal because he has little interest in opening up or getting down into a deep conversation with his wife because he's selfish. And he's not physically affectionate other than when he wants sex from his wife because he sees affection as effeminate and as sex as a masculine activity more akin to hunting, scoring, or conquering. He needs to learn that being a man is the opposite of being a woman, that both are made in the image of God and express the same emotion in masculine and feminine ways. Success and Status Stewart believes being a man is about what you have and do rather than who you are and who you serve. Like a foolish ex-jock, this fellow is forever talking about being consumed by any scorekeeping that he can use to show his superiority over others. For example, the beauty of his wife, his strength, appearance, health, car, income, degree, skills, university he graduated from, children's performance and possessions. You never have to ask this guy what his latest victory is because he'll make sure to tell you what a winner he is. Give him heck, Hank. He thinks men are solely warriors, brawlers, and tough guys. He's prone to a short temper, and his wife is often afraid of upsetting him and the wrath she might endure. The simplest way to understand this guy is that he's a controlling bully. Bullying has worked for him, so he feels no need to change. He's been able, for the most part, to get through life finding weaker people who avoid conflict and then bullying them around. His children feel no close connection to him, and his wife is left with his horrible choices of leaving the fool, sticking around to toughen up like a man and fight back, or just bowing her head, shutting her mouth, and doing what she's told, unlike a pet. Then there's I'm the boss, Bob. He loves to be in authority and tell others what to do, but he hates being under authority and doing what he's told. Wherever he finds himself, he appoints himself king and lord. He loves to be in charge, boss people around, and bark out orders. He's happy so long as he's the boss and gets his way, but becomes quite contentious, even a whiny baby, when he does not get his way. Men like Bob go from church to church declaring they can't find a good one, and by good church they mean one led by a pastor dumb enough to take orders. Their wives are often weary women, and it shows on their faces. Their children grow up to despise them or parrot them, either of which is a tragedy. See, man, we shouldn't be so tough that we're not tender, because when we do, we become chauvinist and we boss people around and we keep our thumb on people and we hurt them. But see, the opposite is true too. So many of us men, we're just tender and we're not tough. See if you recognize any of these guys. Little boy Larry, he never grew up like Peter Pan. He tends to be disorganized and has a hard time getting his life together for an extended time. Getting and keeping a job are always tough because he's not very ambitious and finds that ongoing responsibilities tend to get in the way of his hobbies and friends. He's immature. His interests and mannerisms are those of a boy, not a man. Unable to pay his bills or look after himself, he tends to borrow money from other people who will keep an eye on him in ways an adult looks after a child. Women are attracted to him in the way a mother is attracted to a helpless baby. Sturdy Oak Owen goes to work, comes home, cuts the grass, mends the fence, pays the bills, turns on the TV, and checks out. He's physically present, but he's emotionally absent. He's always working on his car, always on the internet, he's always in his study, he's always in the garage, he's always in the yard. He's always doing something other than connecting with his family. His hobbies tend to be solo activities like fishing, hunting, or motorcycle riding, or they may include a few of his buddies, but not his family. He does not hug, he does not speak, and ultimately he's a coward, afraid of being emotionally involved in the life of his family. Hyper-spiritual Henry. He's the guy with the Christian t-shirts and Christian bumper stickers, always listening to praise music and reading the latest trendy Christian book. He embarrasses his wife and children. The kids don't bring friends over to the house because they fear their father will have a Ned Flanders episode, where everything he has to be connected to some out-of-context Bible verse, theological position, or just downright odd spiritual lesson. And then there's Good Time Gary. He's super fun. He's the life of the party. He's a really nice guy, so no one ever really puts a finger in his chest as they ought to. He's funny, he's charming, he's winsome, he's entertaining. There's always a crowd of people around him. Everybody likes him. He gets along with everybody. And here's the key. Everybody likes him, but nobody respects him. Every time something happens in his life, he turns it into a joke. He doesn't realize that his life is the joke. He can't hold a job, can't pay the bills, can't get out of bed in the morning, can't follow through on a commitment, and can't stay organized, can't see anything through to completion. He'll draw a crowd, but they won't follow him because he's not going anywhere. He's not a leader. For the wife who's married to this guy, eventually he becomes so cute, not so funny, and not so clever. He becomes foundly annoying. She tires of the jokes and the good times and everything's funny and aren't I clever and cute. She wants a king of a man she can depend on, not a court jester for a husband. So that's what happens when we become too tender and not tough. And men, as I close, here's the thing. Our key is to look to Jesus. Jesus was tough and Jesus was tender. Jesus was tough with religious blockheads and false teachers, the proud and bullies. Jesus was tender with women and children and those who were suffering or humble. Additionally, Jesus took responsibility for himself. Jesus spent 30 years swinging a hammer as a carpenter. He worked a job. He took responsibility. And Jesus ultimately took responsibility for us on the cross. See, my sins were not Jesus's fault. But Jesus made my sins his responsibility and he carried them to the cross. And there on the cross, he nailed them there and satisfied God's wrath towards Byron Potter. Jesus took responsibility. And this is the essence of the gospel, that Jesus Christ has loved us enough to take our biggest problem, sin, upon himself and carry it to the cross. So men, here's the thing. We are to love our wives like Jesus loved the church. We take responsibility for them. We lead them. And we love them. So if you would, with your heads bowed and eyes closed, these guys are going to come back up. Here's what I would tell you is that first and foremost is that some of us in here, we can't love our wives the way that Christ loved the church because we don't know Jesus. And so today, before you leave, you need to put your faith and trust in Jesus. Jesus lived the life you should have lived. Jesus died the death you deserved, men. Jesus took your place. And if you have trusted in Jesus, hear me, there'll be a change that takes place in your life where you realize it's not about me anymore, it's about him. And you will love your wife as he loved the church. So if you don't know Jesus, I invite you today, stop putting him off. Stop being so tough and saying, I'll do it later. No, no. Today's the day to trust in Jesus. For the rest of us, men that know Jesus, we've all got areas that we could repent of. Man, as I studied for this, it kicked me in the teeth because I know that there's areas where I'm failing as a husband to my wife. And I'm not showing honor in ways that I need to. And so if that's you this morning, man, I would just ask you, maybe right there where you're at, or maybe what you need to do is here in a minute, as these guys play, you just need to grab your wife and come down to the front, take a knee and pray. Maybe your marriage is on hard times. Men, start loving her like Jesus loved the church. It may not change overnight, but I promise you, you start loving her like that, God will change your heart. You just love her. Father, I thank you so much for this day. Thank you for what Jesus has done. Thank you that he loved us. He didn't wait for us to come to him. He didn't wait for us to fulfill a list of demands before he loved us. No, when we were at our most unlovable, Jesus opened up his arms and he died. So Father, let that message take hold of our hearts. For those of us that don't know Jesus, I pray that today we get it and that we put our trust in him. Father, for the rest of us men that do know you, forgive us where we failed. Forgive us where we've not shown our wives honor. Forgive us where we've not led them spiritually. Forgive us where we've been too tough with them and not tender enough. Forgive us where we've been too tender and not tough in protecting them and defending them. Father, change our hearts today as men. Because I know that if you'll change our hearts as men, then Father, you'll begin to change the life of our church. You'll begin to change the life of this community. You'll begin to change the life of the world. Thank you, Jesus, for what you've done. Thank you that you took responsibility for what was not yours, my sin, and you died for me. If you would, please stand. Heads bowed, eyes closed. These guys are going to play. I don't know what God's leading you to do. Maybe you need to come down and pray. Maybe you need to pray right there where you're at. Maybe you need to talk to me in the next few minutes as these guys play. This time's for you.